Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. In March 2013, Jorge Mario Bergoglio was elected the 266th Pope of the Catholic Church. He chose the name Francis in honor of St. Francis of Assisi. Born in 1936 in Argentina, his parents were Italian immigrants. He became a Jesuit in 1960 and was ordained a priest in 1969. It is fair to say that Francis has broken some stereotypes. He's a longtime soccer fan with a serious interest in traditional Argentine music. And in his short time in office, he's set a dramatically less formal tone for the papacy and spoken out on a range of important and controversial issues. The head of the Helena Diocese, Bishop George Thomas, is here to discuss the new pope. Bishop Thomas, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
It's my pleasure, Brian.
Before we discuss the pope, tell us a little about yourself. Where'd you grow up? What'd your parents do?
I was born in Anaconda, Montana, raised in Butte. The priest teased me that I have dual citizenship, so it's kind of nice. I attended Carroll College, graduated in 1972, and then because my dad and mom lived in Washington State by that time, I was ordained to the priesthood for the Archdiocese of Seattle. I was there for the next 28 years. And then in 2004, Pope John Paul recycled me, and I came back to Montana.
What led you to want to become a priest?
Well, I guess I came from a very traditionally Catholic family. We had great pastors in my youth and my childhood. I was inspired by the priests over in Butte. And as early as 5 years old, I told my dad and mom, I think I want to be a priest. And I really never did look back.
When you say great pastors, what makes a great pastor?
Well, we had a priest over in Butte, Father Jack Sladich, who we used to say was our going-my-way priest. He was affable. He was very present to the families. He would occasionally dine with us in our family home. But it was his personal holiness and happiness that I found so compelling.
Has your work and life as a priest been what you anticipated? Any surprises?
It's absolutely not what I anticipated.
I thought that
I would be a priest with a small country parish, and I had little in my mind, I had a little white steeple in mind, and a little picket fence, and a Labrador in the back of my pickup truck, and being more of a rural pastor. I have been in the all exclusively urban settings in the Archdiocese. For many years, I served at the cathedral as the associate pastor in Seattle. I was vicar general, which means the bishop's chief of staff, for many years. At nighttime, I was the chaplain for a 3,000-bed jail for 13 years. I headed the board of directors for Catholic Charities. I headed the Archdiocesan Housing Authority for the poor. So a lot of different social ministries, very different from the little white steeple that I had in mind many years ago.
Did you learn anything you didn't know ministering to prisoners in a jail?
Oh, I think probably the big lesson is that these are ordinary people with extraordinary problems. And prisoners have the capacity to change. There are a lot of stereotypes about prison ministry, but I saw miracles happen in that 13 years.
Regarding the Pope, were you surprised at his election?
I was not really surprised. About 2 weeks before the Pope was elected, I wrote a column for our diocesan paper, and I isolated, I think, seven or so qualities that I wanted to see in the incoming Pope. And based on that column, I should go to the horse races. I talked about a man who would exude personal holiness and happiness, somebody who would be a missionary in chief, somebody who would have a great passion for the poor, somebody committed to interreligious dialogue. And I think on all the points, he has been exactly what I had in mind. I just did not know about this particular archbishop. I knew nothing about him. So when he came out into the loggia, I drew a blank. I had no backgrounder on him at all.
He's a Jesuit. Of what significance is that?
Well, he's a Jesuit, of course, who has also served in diocesan ministry, but his approach to pastoral ministry is very Jesuit-like. Now, some of the characteristics. He sees life with a very wide lens. He's very committed to prayerful discernment, so he doesn't move precipitously. He's very thoughtful. He's highly consultative. And those are all Jesuit traits. They talk a lot about Jesuit discernment, and discernment is very much at the core of what he does and how he operates.
Tell us what you mean exactly by the word discernment.
Well, it is allowing prayer and consultation the wide scope to take the lead, not to jump to conclusions. He himself admits very humbly, which is also one of his characteristics, by the way, he admits very humbly that in his early years as an archbishop, he moved very hastily, and he made decisions with almost an authoritarian mode. And I think that that kind of betrayed his Jesuit upbringings. So he moves more slowly. There's an Italian word, sopra sedere, and it means ripening. And he's very much into that. He asks questions. He lets things kind of crockpot for a while, and then he makes decisions based on a lot of time and discernment and consultation.
Mm-hmm. What about the name Francis? There's never been a pope named Francis. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So what's the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that Francis, of course, was a man who was himself a man of poverty and humility, a man who was committed to reform, but beginning with personal reform, that is, his own personal conversion before he attempted to convert others to the Lord. But I think you can see in Pope Francis a deep commitment to the world's poor, and I think hence one of the reasons why he chose that name.
I want to ask you about some specific quotes of his and the implications within the church and then in terms of the church's outreach to its following and then beyond the church's boundaries, because it seems to me the pope is clearly in that sort of position, whatever pope you have, and this one particularly seems to me to be able to reach beyond traditional boundaries. First, let's start with some key elements of his thinking internally. Church structure, the role of priests, and the hierarchy of the church. Here's the quote in an interview with an Italian journalist who, interestingly to me, is an atheist, and the Pope sought him out in response to a letter that this journalist wrote to him and invited him to come and talk over coffee. I think it was coffee. anyway, the editor of La Repubblica, quote, this is the Pope. The heads of the church have often been narcissists, flattered and thrilled by their courtiers. The court is the leprosy of the church. Now, that's pretty strong talk.
Well, I think it is strong talk, but I think that he's got the order of things correct. He describes himself as the servant of the servants of God. He's warned clergy not to sit in the sacristy and wait for people to come to them. He's told priests, you should have, the shepherd should have the smell of the sheep. So he's warning us not to be comfortable in our living rooms or in our comfort. He's warning the church away from the danger of mediocrity, to be out on the pavement, being among the people. And he is doing it first himself.
So clearly he's talking about some aspects of real church history as he sees it historically. You have a very complex organization with many different philosophical tenets within it, I say as an outsider. Mm-hmm. How is this being received by people, including those people that might have strayed from that approach to being a priest?
I think that he is comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. I think that he is a man who is disturbing the order presently. He's asking the clergy to think reflectively and deeply about who they are and why they were ordained and what their original calling was, to shake aside trappings of power in favor of service. I think that it's a very good thing. And, of course, he's going to disturb a lot of people in the process.
This is Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Bishop George Thomas of the Helena Diocese about the new pope, Pope Francis. You've been a priest for more than 30 years. You're a sophisticated man, and you understand you're in a very sophisticated organization. What's your sense for how the comfortable, as you describe them, are going to react to this pope who's making them perhaps uncomfortable?
I think that the Holy Father is teaching first by example. And one of the great leitmotifs that he teaches about and preaches about is the church's responsibility, and I'd say really every Christian's responsibility, to be mindful of brothers and sisters, especially those who are poor. And so he's asking the church not to just share from their surplus, but to share from substance, to be very generous in our outlook for toward others, not to just write checks, but to be among the poor, to be a servant leader in our own way.
I understand that from reading carefully what he said. My specific question was how people who might have become comfortable in the priesthood and taken a different path, what's your expectation of how they're going to react? Somebody might say, I've been at this for 40 years. I disagree with the Pope. I'm comfortable with my ministry the way I do it. I mean, I assume there are people like that in your organization.
I think there are. I mean, it can be like teachers. We can have a teacher who is excellent and provides fresh lessons every year and meets the young people on their own terms, or you can have somebody who teaches the same thing year after year after year and becomes mediocre. That's just not acceptable. I think that the Holy Father, and I hope that in my own way, I hope I can do the same thing, to challenge our priests to be all they can be, but to follow the counsel of the Second Vatican Council, that is to be a priest among the people and not to be isolated and comfortable in the sacristy or in the rectory.
He has said while the issue of women in the priesthood is not open for discussion, there needs to be deep thinking, and I think he said a new deep theology, I might have that quote wrong, about the role of women, and he's called for, as a layman I would say, a very significantly enhanced role. What's he talking about?
For us in the Pacific Northwest or in the Great Northwest, this is not a new theme, but in some parts of the church which are over-clericalized, it is actually a new and challenging idea. Back in the beginning of the 1960s, the bishops in the Northwest welcomed women into high levels of leadership. So in chanceries, in school systems, in public and private health, women have had important roles of leadership for a long time. I predict that this Holy Father will invite women into significant curial roles.
That is, what does that mean?
That's the offices of the Vatican that are presently run by bishops and archbishops and mostly clerics. And I suspect that he will invite women into very key leadership roles in the highest offices of the church without ordination.
When you did this in the Northwest, was there resistance? I mean, obviously that's a significant initiative. What played out in the church around that issue?
I don't think there was resistance at all. I mean, I think in the Northwest there is a much greater sense of equality among the sexes. And while obviously the question of ordination has never been on the table, and John Paul made that clear, this Holy Father has reiterated that, at the same time, women have extraordinary gifts and talents that have to be called forth and used for the sake of the gospel. And women have done that here. I think that we, in some ways, are a pace setter for that.
In the La Repubblica interview, he defined the mission of the church as the following, quote, to identify the material and non-material needs of the people and try to meet them as we can. Then, this is from the recent apostolic letter of, in our time, the majority of our contemporaries are barely living from day to day with dire consequences. The hearts of many people are gripped by fear and desperation, even in the so-called rich countries. Is that new teaching for the church, or is that a modified version of what we've heard before? Would you say maybe Pope Benedict's encyclical, I think it was called Charity and Truth in 2009?
It's not new teaching, Brian. Back in the late 19th century, Pope Leo XIII wrote a very powerful document, and all through the 20th century, popes have more clearly defined what's come to be known as Catholic social teaching. It's a defined body of teaching. But in a kernel, it's this, that every person has inestimable worth and value, transcendent, that is, made in the likeness of God. And so there are no cast-offs. There are no disposable people. And this particular pope is both saying that and living that. He has a history of being deeply committed and passionately committed to the poor. Paul VI, going back into the 1960s, called this a preferential option for the poor.
On that issue of no cast-offs, that everyone has intrinsic worth, in that same apostolic exhortation, I want to read another quote. Just as the commandment, quote, thou shalt not kill, sets a clear limit in order to safeguard the value of human life, today we also have to say, quote, thou shalt not, to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Such an economy kills. How can it be that it is not a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure, but it is news when the stock market loses 2 points? Today, everything comes under the laws of competition and survival of the fittest, where the powerful feed on the powerless. And this is the Pope talking, not Brian Kahn. As a consequence, masses of people find themselves excluded and marginalized, without mark, without possibilities, without any means of escape. Again, I would say pretty strong talk.
I certainly think it is strong talk, but that's the heart of Catholic social teaching. He is warning against profit-driven economies or profit-centered economies and wants to exchange those for person-centered economies. The decisions that are being made in boardrooms and by corporate owners and managers oftentimes are driven by the bottom line. And he's asking to also ask, what impact does this decision in our corporate boardroom have on ordinary people, and especially on the poor?
That was my read of it. It goes on. It's about 4 pages out of a 136-page approximately letter or statement. It seemed to me a fair description of an indictment of purely profit-driven enterprise, one might say global corporate structure. What does the Church do about that? Now, I have to go back. I mentioned Pope Benedict's 2009 encyclical, which said something similar, people-centered versus profit-centered ethics should control the economy. It's one thing to talk about that and to say it frankly and candidly. What does the Church do about it?
I'll tell you a little story that goes back to my Seattle days. I had a corporate vice president come to see me, and his question was very surprising to me. It so happened that he worked for a company that is one of the largest wholesalers of coffee in the United States. And he came to see me because he said, we are wary of having conversations with our coffee growers in the Central and Latin America, and we would like to know if you could provide us with a contact in the Latin American church, because we're concerned. We do not want to be driven by violation of child labor, and we want to ensure that what we are doing is being done ethically, and that we're providing substantial prices for the coffee that we're buying. And so I gave him the name of a churchman in the particular country he was asking about. Well, when he left, I go, that is really wonderful. I said, why did you come and ask me? He said, well, because the president of our company took an ethics class at Seattle University, and it spurred these questions in his heart, and he wants to ensure that his company is living in ways that are consonant with Catholic social teaching.
That's a great story. I would say there are a couple of implications of that story. One is that some people are reachable despite the competitive pressures of market forces. Two, clearly from what your Pope is saying, when he looks at the world today in 2013, that sort of ethic hasn't spread nearly adequately enough. Fair?
That's very fair. The Church is always going to face an uphill battle. I think.
Why?
Well, because profit and certainly selfishness and a culture of, he describes it, a culture of narcissism, that's endemic. And so we have to do this soul by soul, heart by heart, in order to make it happen.
This is Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Bishop George Thomas of the Helena Diocese about the new Pope, Pope Francis. Pursuing the issue soul by soul and heart by heart, which I might argue would be a traditional church approach, is up against something that the Pope describes in that same letter as this: the thirst for power and possessions knows no limits. In this system, which tends to devour everything that stands in the way of increased profits, whatever is fragile, like the environment, is defenseless before the interests of a deified market, which becomes the only rule. My question would be political action. The Church has engaged in what I will call political advocacy, not necessarily action, on issues like contraception, abortion, gay rights or gay marriage, very vocal and direct. The bishops recently, when the Obamacare thing was hot, I think the bishops came out with a very strong statement because of the contraceptive requirement. So I would call that political action. What are the chances the Church is going to engage in that sort of political action around economic justice issues? How do you see that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I stood up on the floor of the USCCB, the Conference of Catholic Bishops, a couple of seasons ago, and I raised the question on the floor. And I said at that time that in the Diocese of Helena, I confront almost every day people who are struggling, living hand to mouth. The reality of the rural poor is very much present to us. And I said, I think that we as a bishop's conference have to place time and energy and thought, and at that time discernment, around the issues of growing poverty in the United States and the radical economic injustice that I can see right here in our own front yard. You know, a handful of the bishops at that time came up to me after the meeting and said, thank you for raising that. I predict that under the new leadership of the conference, the Archbishop of Louisville, Archbishop Kurtz, we'll see a sea change. He's a man who himself was a social worker. He's a man who I know has a passion for the poor and the needy. And my prediction is that we'll begin to see some new initiatives on the national level that will keep the poor and the needy and questions around economic justice very much in focus.
Assuming you're right in terms of change of direction, what can the public expect to see, let's say, from the bishops? Is it advocacy? Is it talking in the pulpits in the parishes throughout the United States about these issues? What are the concrete manifestations of a sea change like that?
The body of Catholic social teaching has a very different approach. I mean, it recognizes that the laity have to be on the front lines. And so it's the formation of the hearts of the laity. So that means people in the halls of government, in the corporate boardrooms, and even just the classrooms, neighborhoods, where people themselves become engaged. They have a new vision for culture and society, transforming culture in the light of the gospel. The task of the clergy is to form the hearts of the laity. The task of the laity is to move forward on the front lines.
I was interested in the La Repubblica interview where the editor asked the Pope about the Church's engagement in politics, and the Pope was very clear. He said, the Church does not engage in politics, but my words, I'm not quoting him now, citizens of goodwill have to engage in politics as people of conscience. He also argued forcefully, and I was quite taken by it, that across religious and political and national lines, it seemed to me very clear, he was urging people who believed in the good, that was his word, and he recognized they defined it differently, to work for that good, where they could together and where they didn't disagree, still to work for the good, and said that could change the face of the world. So clearly, what you're saying, it seems to me, is consistent with his position that civic engagement is essential.
It's essential, and there's another dimension to that, and that is the ecumenical or interreligious approach to that as well. There is strength in numbers, and I think there needs to be greater understanding and greater cooperation among the various religious bodies, religious leaders, to move as a network on behalf of the poor.
I did come across the quote, quote, everyone has his own idea of good and evil and must choose to follow the good and fight evil as he conceives them. That would be enough to make the world a better place. Do you expect, given what I'll call the dynamism of this new pope, concrete expressions of church initiative to reach across traditional boundaries? By that I mean beyond the Catholic Church to other faiths, economic interests. He refers to getting politicians involved. Is that beyond the scope of what the church might do?
Oh, no. I'll tell you, these are anecdotal, but I think significant. Since Francis was elected, going back this last springtime, I have people come up to me who I've never seen before. Example, the pilot on the airplane when I was heading down to Denver for a meeting, a man who identified himself as a strong and committed atheist, a man who says, I am from the Jewish background, more of a cultural Jewish man than a religious Jewish man. However, each one of those, in his own way, said to me, we're really taken by your new pope. And the fellow who was the Jewish man said, now, not enough to become Catholic, but nonetheless, I really like his message. The atheist said, I really wish I had faith, and I'm really inspired by your new Holy Father. The man on the plane said, man, I sure like your new boss. So I think that those are ways to say they're being inspired. He's causing people to think about their life, the meaning of life, their priorities. And I think that's all a good thing. That is spurring change.
And I think it's highly significant at this time. Polls show in the United States, I don't know about the world, 70% of the people feel we're headed in the wrong direction, roughly speaking. They're not just talking about economics. There's a what I'll call an aspect of the human spirit, of morality, of other things. And it seems to me that he's touching that in a very unusual way.
This is another Jesuit characteristic, where he is committed to changing hearts and attitudes before structures. And I think this is the period of time where he is turning the soil, removing the stones, beginning to plant seeds. One of the important caveats I have in talking about this Holy Father is that he'd say this about himself. This is not about Francis. This is not about the Francis effect. Francis is being driven by a great passion for Jesus Christ, and he is leading others to see Christ and to encounter Christ and to know Christ. And that, I believe, is the underlying passion that Francis brings to this office as Pope.
Let's talk for a minute about people who, with full honesty, disagree with the Pope's message. The global system of corporate economics is global, well entrenched, supported by certainly the people who benefit the most from it. I think it's fair to say they won't take kindly to this sort of line of argument. As it becomes expressed in political action, there'll be serious opposition if one wants to move beyond changing individual hearts to changing economic structures. What's the Church's role in a political fight like that?
I would like to think that the Church will very systematically form future leaders through the power of Catholic social teaching, see future leaders elected into public office, leaders that have a passion for the poor, leaders that have this wider vision, people committed to Catholic social teaching. And I think it's very possible. This Pope is not naive. He says he's not even described as optimistic. He's a man driven by hope that comes from the gospel.
I asked you at the top of the show what values led you to seek the priesthood. How do they square up with the new pope, the new direction of the Church, if I can call it that?
Mm-hmm. I'm very much in love with what I see in the heart of Pope Francis. I think that it's very consistent with the gospel. I love his personal style, his personal humility, driving sense of happiness and comfort with people, being among the troops, so to speak. And it's, to me, very compelling and very beautiful. He is the embodiment of something that St. Francis of Assisi wrote in his own memoirs, where he said, "I am a poor man, I have nothing, therefore I will give my heart."
Bishop Thomas, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground.
Brian, thank you for the invitation.
And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studio. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.